Kingslayer, to make a peace with the Lannisters. I freed Jaime for Sansa's sake, and Arya's, if she still lives. You know that. But if I nurtured some hope of buying peace as well, was that so ill? Yes, he said. The Lannisters killed my father. Do you think I have forgotten that? I don't know. Have you? Catelyn had never struck her children in anger, but she almost struck Rob then. It was an effort to remind herself how frightened and alone he must feel. You are king in the north. The choice is yours. I only ask that you think on what I've said. The singers make much of kings who die valiantly in battle, but your life is worth more than a song. To me, at least, who gave it to you. She lowered her head. Do I have your leave to go? Yes. He turned away and drew his sword. What he meant to do with it, she could not say. There was no enemy there, no one to fight, only her and him, amongst tall trees and fallen leaves. There are fights no sword can win. Catelyn wanted to tell him, but she feared the king was deaf to such words. Hours later, she was sewing in her bedchamber when young Roland Westling came running with a summons to supper. Good, Catelyn thought, relieved. She had not been certain that her son would want her there after their quarrel. A dutiful squire, she said to Roland gravely. Bran would have been the same. If Rob seemed cool at table and Edmure surly, lame Lothar made up for them both. He was the model of courtesy, reminiscing warmly about Lord Huster, offering Catelyn gentle condolences on the loss of Bran and Rickon, praising Edmure for the victory at Stone Mill, and thanking Rob for the swift, sure justice he had meted out to Rickard Carstark. Lothar's bastard brother, Walder Rivers, was another matter. A harsh, sour man, with old Lord Walder's suspicious face, he spoke but seldom, and devoted most of his attention to the meat and mead that was set before him. When all the empty words were said, the Queen and the other Westlings excused themselves, the remains of the meal were cleared away, and Lothar Frey cleared his throat.
"Before we turn to the business that brings us here, there is another matter," he said solemnly. "A grave matter, I fear. I'd hoped it would not fall to me to bring you these tidings, but it seems I must. My lord father has had a letter from his grandsons."
Catelyn had been so lost in grief for her own that she had almost forgotten the two Freys she had agreed to foster. No more, she thought. Mother have mercy. How many more blows can we bear? Somehow she knew the next word she heard would plunge yet another blade into her heart. The grandsons at Winterfell? She made herself ask. My wards?
Walder and Walder, yes. But they are presently at the Dreadfort, my lady. I grieve to tell you this, but there has been a battle. Winterfell is burned.
Burned? Rob's voice was incredulous.
Your northern lords tried to retake it from the Iron Men. When Theon Greyjoy saw that his prize was lost, he put the castle to the torch.
We have heard naught of any battle, said Sir Brynden.
My nephews are young, I grant you, but they were there. Big Waldo wrote the letter, though his cousin signed as well. It was a bloody bit of business by their account.
Your castellan was slain. Sir Roderick, was that his name?
Sir Roderick Cassell, said Catelyn numbly. That dear, brave, loyal old soul. She could almost see him, tugging on his fierce white whiskers. What of our other people?
The Iron Men put many of them to the sword, I fear.
Wordless with rage, Rob slammed a fist down on the table and turned his face away, so the Freys would not see his tears. But his mother saw them. The world grows a little darker every day. Catelyn's thoughts went to Sir Roderick's little daughter, Beth, to tireless Maester Lewin and cheerful Septon Shale, Micken at the forge, Farlan and Parler in the kennels, old Nan, and simple Hodor. Her heart was sick. Please, not all.
No, said Lame Lothar. The women and children hid, my nephews Walder and Walder among them. With Winterfell in ruins, the survivors were carried back to the Dreadfort by this son of Lord Bolton's.
Bolton's son? Rob's voice was strained. Walder Rivers spoke up.
A bastard son, I believe.
Not Ramsay Snow.
Does Lord Roos have another bastard?
Rob scowled.
This Ramsay was a monster and a murderer, and he died a coward,
or so I'm told.
I cannot speak to that. There's so much confusion in any war. Many false reports. All I can tell you is that my nephews claim it was this bastard son of Bolton's who saved the women of Winterfell and the little ones. They are safe at the Dreadfort now, all those who remain.
Theon? Rob said suddenly. What happened to Theon Greyjoy? Was he slain? Lame Lothar spread his hands.
That I cannot say, Your Grace. Walder and Walder made no mention of his fate. Perhaps Lord Bolton might know, if he has had word from this son of his.
Sir Brynden said,
We will be certain to ask him.
You're all distraught, I see. I'm sorry to have brought you such fresh grief. Perhaps we should adjourn until the morrow. Our business can wait until you have composed yourselves.
No, said Rob. I want the matter settled. Her brother Edmure nodded.
Me as well. Do you have an answer to our offer, my lord?
I do.
Lothar smiled.
My lord father bids me tell your grace that he will agree to this new marriage alliance between our houses and renew his fealty to the king in the north upon the condition that the king's grace apologize for the insult done to House Frey in his royal person, face to face.
An apology was a small enough price to pay, but Catelyn misliked this petty condition of Lord Walder's at once.
I'm pleased, Rob said cautiously. It was never my wish to cause this rift between us, Lothar. The Freys have fought valiantly for my cause. I would have them at my side once more.
You're too kind, Your Grace. As you accept these terms, I am then instructed to offer Lord Tully the hand of my sister, the Lady Roslin, a maid of 16 years. Roslin is my lord father's youngest daughter by Lady Bethany of House Rosby, his sixth wife. She has a gentle nature and a gift for music.
Edmure shifted in his seat.
Might not it be better if I first met?
You'll meet when you're wet,
said Walder Rivers curtly.
Unless Lord Tully feels the need to count her teeth first.
Edmure kept his temper.
I will take your word so far as her teeth are concerned, but it would be pleasant if I might gaze upon her face before I espoused her.
You must accept her now, my lord, said Walder Rivers, else my father's offer is withdrawn.
Lame Lothar spread his hands.
My brother has a soldier's bluntness, but what he says is true. It is my lord father's wish that this marriage take place at once.
At once?
Edmure sounded so unhappy that Catelyn had the unworthy thought that perhaps he had been entertaining notions of breaking the betrothal after the fighting was done.
Has Lord Walder forgotten that we are fighting a war?
Brynden Blackfish asked sharply.
Scarcely, said Lothar. That is why he insists that the marriage take place now, sir. Men die in war, even men who are young and strong. What would become of our alliance should Lord Edmure fall before he took Roslin to bride? And there is my father's age to consider as well. He is past 90, and not like to see the end of this struggle. It would put his noble heart at peace if he could see his dear Roslin safely wed before the gods take him, so he might die with the knowledge that the girl had a strong husband to cherish and protect her.
We all want Lord Walder to die happy. Catelyn was growing less and less comfortable with this arrangement. My brother has just lost his own father. he needs time to mourn.
"Roslyn is a cheerful girl," said Lowther. "She may be the very thing Lord Edmure needs to help him through his grief."
"And my grandfather has come to mislike lengthy betrothals," the bastard Walder Rivers added. "I cannot imagine why."
Rob gave him a chilly look. "I take your meaning, Rivers. Pray excuse us."
"As your grace commands."
Lame Lothar rose, and his bastard brother helped him hobble from the room. Edmure was seething.
"They're as much as saying that my promise is worthless. Why should I let that old weasel choose my bride? Lord Walder has other daughters besides this Roslyn, granddaughters as well. I should be offered the same choice you were. I'm his liege lord. He should be overjoyed that I'm willing to wed any of them."
"He's a proud man, and we've wounded him," said Catelyn.
"The others take his pride. I will not be shamed in my own hall. My answer is no."
Rob gave him a weary look. "I will not command you, not in this. But if you refuse, Lord Frey will take it for another slight, and any hope of putting this aright will be gone."
"You cannot know that," Edmure insisted. "Frey has wanted me for one of his daughters since the day I was born. He will not let a chance like this slip between those grasping fingers of his. When Lothar brings him our answer, he'll come wheedling back and accept a betrothal, and to a daughter of my choosing."
"Perhaps, in time," said Brendan Blackfish. "But can we wait while Lothar rides back and forth with offers and counters?"
Rob's hands curled into fists. "I must get back to the north. My brother's dead. Winterfell burned. My small folk put to the sword. The gods only know what this bastard of Bolton is about, or whether Theon is still alive and on the loose. I can't sit here waiting for a wedding that might or might not happen."
"It must happen," said Catelyn, though not gladly. "I have no more wish to suffer Walder Frey's insults and complaints than you do, brother, but I see little choice here. Without this wedding, Rob's cause is lost. Edmure, we must accept."
"We must accept," he echoed peevishly. "I don't see you offering to become the ninth Lady Frey, Cat."
"The eighth Lady Frey is still alive and well, so far as I know," she replied, "thankfully. Otherwise it might well have come to that, knowing Lord Walder."
The Blackfish said, "I am the last man in the Seven Kingdoms to tell anyone who they must wed, nephew."
"Nonetheless, you did say something about making amends for your Battle of the Fords." "I had in mind a different sort of amends. Single combat with a Kingslayer. 7 years of penance as a begging brother. Swimming the sunset sea with my legs tied."
When he saw no one was smiling, Edmure threw up his hands.
"Ach, the others take you all. Very well, I'll wed the wench as amends."
Davos. Lord Alistair looked up sharply.
"Voices," he said. "Do you hear, Davos? Someone is coming for us."
"Lamprey," said Davos. "It's time for our supper, or near enough."
Last night Lamprey had brought them half a beef and bacon pie, and a flagon of mead as well. Just the thought of it made his belly start to rumble.
"No, there's more than one."
"He's right."
Davos heard two voices at least, and footsteps, growing louder. He got to his feet and moved to the bars. Lord Alistair brushed a straw from his clothes.
"The king has sent for me, or the queen, yes. Selyse would never let me rot here, her own blood."
Outside the cell, Lamprey appeared with a ring of keys in hand. Sir Axel Florent and four guardsmen followed close behind him. They waited beneath the torch while Lamprey searched for the correct key.
"Axel," Lord Alistair said, "gods be good. Is it the king who sends for me, or the queen?"
"No one has sent for you, traitor," Sir Axel said.
Lord Alistair recoiled as if he had been slapped.
"No, I swear to you I committed no treason. Why won't you listen? If his grace would only let me explain."
Lamprey thrust a great iron key into the lock, turned it, and pulled open the cell. The rusty hinges screamed in protest.
"You," he said to Davis, "come."
"Where?" Davis looked to Sir Axel. "Tell me true, sir. Do you mean to burn me?"
"You are sent for. Can you walk?"
"I can walk."
Davis stepped from his cell. Lord Alistair gave a cry of dismay as Lamprey slammed the door shut once more.
"Take the torch," Sir Axel commanded the jailer. "Leave the traitor to the darkness."
"No," his brother said. "Axel, please, don't take the light. Gods have mercy."
"Gods? There is only R'hllor and the other."
Sir Axel gestured sharply, and one of his guardsmen pulled the torch from its sconce and led the way to the stair.
"Are you taking me to Melisande?"
Davis asked.
"She will be there," Sir Axel said. "She is never far from the king, but it is his grace himself who asks for you."
Davis lifted his hand to his chest, where once his luck had hung in a leather bag on a thong.
"Gone now," he remembered, "and the ends of four fingers as well."
But his hands were still long enough to wrap around a woman's throat, he thought, especially a slender throat like hers. Up they went, climbing the turnpike stair in single file. The walls were rough, dark stone, cool to the touch. The light of the torches went before them, and their shadows marched beside them on the walls. At the third turn they passed an iron gate that opened on blackness, and another at the fifth turn. Davis guessed that they were near the surface by then, perhaps even above it. The next door they came to was made of wood, but still they climbed. Now the walls were broken by arrow slits, but no shafts of sunlight pried their way through the thickness of the stone. It was night outside. His legs were aching by the time Sir Axel thrust open a heavy door and gestured him through. Beyond, a high stone bridge arched over emptiness to a massive central tower called the Stone Drum. A sea wind blew restlessly through the arches that supported the roof, and Davis could smell the salt waters they crossed. He took a deep breath, filling his lungs with a clean, cold air.
"Wind and water, give me strength," he prayed.
A huge night fire burned in the yard below, to keep the terrors of the dark at bay, and the Queen's men were gathered around it, singing praises to their new red god. They were in the centre of the bridge when Sir Axel stopped suddenly. He made a brusque gesture with his hand, and his men moved out of earshot.
"Were it my choice, I would burn you with my brother Alistair," he told Davis. "You are both traitors." "Say what you will, I would never betray King Stannis." "Oh, you would. You will. I see it in your face, and I have seen it in the flames as well. R'hllor has blessed me with that gift. Like Lady Melisande, he shows me the future in the fire. Stannis Baratheon will sit the Iron Throne. I have seen it, and I know what must be done. His Grace must make me his hand in place of my traitor brother." "And you will tell him so?"
"Will I?"
Davis said nothing. "The Queen has urged my appointment," Sir Axel went on. "Even your old friend from Lice, the pirate San, he says the same. We have made a plan together, him and me, yet his grace does not act. The defeat gnaws inside him, a black worm in his soul. It is up to us who love him to show him what to do. If you are as devoted to his cause as you claim, smuggler, you will join your voice to ours. Tell him that I am the only hand he needs. Tell him, and when we sail, I shall see that you have a new ship."
"A ship?"
Davis studied the other man's face. Sir Axel had big florent ears, much like the Queen's. Coarse hair grew from them, as from his nostrils. More sprouted in tufts and patches beneath his double chin. His nose was broad, his brow beetled, his eyes close-set and hostile.
"He would sooner give me a pyre than a ship. He said as much. But if I do him this favor—"
"If you think to betray me,"
Sir Axel said. "Pray remember that I have been Castellan of Dragonstone a good long time. The garrison is mine. Perhaps I cannot burn you without the king's consent, but who is to say you might not suffer a fall?"
He laid a meaty hand on the back of Davis's neck and shoved him bodily against the waist-high side of the bridge, then shoved a little harder to force his face out over the yard.
"Do you hear me?"
"I hear," said Davis.
"And you dare name me a traitor?"
Sir Axel released him.
"Good," he smiled. "His grace awaits. Best we do not keep him."
At the very top of Stone Drum, within the great round room called the Chamber of the Painted Table, they found Stannis Baratheon standing behind the artifact that gave the hall its name, a massive slab of wood carved and painted in the shape of Westeros, as it had been in the time of Aegon the Conqueror. An iron brazier stood beside the king, its coals glowing a ruddy orange. Four tall, pointed windows looked out to north, south, east, and west. Beyond was the night and the starry sky. Davis could hear the wind moving, and fainter, the sounds of the sea.
"Your Grace," Sir Axel said, "as it please you, I have brought the Onion Knight."
"So I see." Stannis wore a grey wool tunic, a dark red mantle, and a plain black leather belt from which his sword and dagger hung. A red gold crown with flame-shaped points encircled his brows. The look of him was a shock. He seemed 10 years older than the man that Davis had left at Storm's End when he sailed for the Blackwater and the battle that would be their undoing. The king's close-cropped beard was spider-webbed with grey hairs, and he had dropped 2 stone or more of weight. He had never been a fleshy man, but now the bones moved beneath his skin like spears, fighting to cut free. Even his crown seemed too large for his head. His eyes were blue pits lost in deep hollows, and the shape of a skull could be seen beneath his face. Yet when he saw Davis, a faint smile brushed his lips. "So the sea has returned me, my knight of the fish and onions."
"It did, Your Grace. Does he know that he had me in his dungeon?"
Davis went to one knee.
"Rise, Sir Davis," Stannis commanded. "I've missed you, sir. I've need of good counsel, and you never gave me less. So tell me true. What is the penalty for, treason?"
The word hung in the air.
A frightful word, thought Davis.
Was he being asked to condemn his cellmate? Or himself, perchance?
Kings know the penalty for treason better than any man.
Treason,
he finally managed weakly.
What else would you call it, to deny a king and seek to steal his rightful throne? I ask you again, what is the penalty for treason under the law?
Davis had no choice but to answer.
Death, he said. The penalty is death, Your Grace. It has always been so. I am not a cruel man, Sir Davis. You know me, have known me long. This is not my decree. It has always been so, since Aegon's day and before. Daemon Blackfyre, the Brothers Toyne, the Vulture King, Grandmaester Harroth, traitors have always paid with their lives. Even Rhaenyra Targaryen. She was daughter to one king and mother to 2 more, yet she died a traitor's death for trying to usurp her brother's crown. It is law. Law, Davis, not cruelty.
Yes, Your Grace. He does not speak of me.
Davis felt a moment's pity for his cellmate down in the dark. He knew he should keep silent. But he was tired and sick of heart, and he heard himself say,
"Sire, Lord Florent meant no treason."
"Do smugglers have another name for it? I made him hand, and he would have sold my rights for a bowl of pease porridge. He would even have given them Shireen, mine only child. He would have wed to a bastard born of incest."
The king's voice was thick with anger.
"My brother had a gift for inspiring loyalty, even in his foes. At Summerhall, he won 3 battles in a single day,
and brought Lords Grandison and Cufferin back to Storm's End as prisoners. He hung their banners in the hall as trophies. Catherine's white fawns were spotted with blood, and Grandison's sleeping lion was torn there in two. Yet they would sit beneath those banners of a night, drinking and feasting with Robert, even took them hunting. "These men meant to deliver you to Ares to be burned," I told him, after I saw them throwing axes in the yard. "You should not be putting axes in their hands." Robert only laughed. "I would have thrown Grandison and Catherine into a dungeon, but he'd turn them into friends. Lord Catherine died at Ashford Castle, cut down by Randall Tarley, whilst fighting for Robert. Lord Grandison was wounded on the Trident, and died of it a year after. My brother made them love him, but it would seem that I inspire only betrayal, even in my own blood and kin, brother, grandfather, cousins, good uncle."
"Your Grace," said Sir Axel, "I beg you, give me the chance to prove to you that not all Florans are so feeble." "Sir Axel would have me resume the war," King Stannis told Davos. "The Lannisters think I am done and beaten, and my sworn lords have forsaken me near every one. Even Lord Estamont, my own mother's father, has bent his knee to Joffrey. The few loyal men who remain to me are losing heart. They waste their days drinking and gambling, and lick their wounds like beaten curs."
"Battle will set their hearts ablaze once more, Your Grace," Sir Axel said.
"Defeat is a disease, and victory is a cure."
"Victory?" The king's mouth twisted. "There are victories and victories, sir. But tell your plan to Sir Davis. I would hear his views on what you propose."
Sir Axel turned to Davis with a look on his face, much like the look that proud Lord Belgrave must have worn the day King Balor the Blessed had commanded him to wash the beggar's ulcerous feet. Nonetheless, he obeyed. The plan Sir Axel had devised with Salador San was simple. A few hours' sail from Dragonstone lay Claw Isle, ancient sea-girt seat of House Celtigar. Lord Adrian Celtigar had fought beneath the fiery heart on the Black Water, but once taken, he had wasted no time in going over to Joffrey. He remained in King's Landing even now,
too frightened of his Grace's wrath to come near Dragonstone, no doubt, Sir Axel declared, and wisely so. The man has betrayed his rightful king.
Sir Axel proposed to use Salador San's fleet, and the men who had escaped the Blackwater, Stannis still had some 1,500 on Dragonstone, more than half of them Florans, to exact retribution for Lord Celtigar's defection. Claw Isle was but lightly garrisoned, its castle reputedly stuffed with Moorish carpets, Volantine glass, gold and silver plate, jewelled cups, magnificent hawks, an axe of Valyrian steel, a horn that could summon monsters from the deep, chests of rubies, and more wines than a man could drink in 100 years. Though Celtigar had shown the world a niggardly face, he had never stinted on his own comforts.
"Put his castle to the torch, and his people to the sword, I say," Sir Axel concluded. "Leave Claw Isle, a desolation of ash and bone, fit only for carrion crows, so the realm might see the fate of those who bed with Lannisters."
Stannis listened to Sir Axel's recitation in silence, grinding his jaw slowly from side to side. When it was done, he said, "It could be done, I believe. The risk is small. Joffrey has no strength at sea until Lord Redwine sets sail from the harbour. The plunder might serve to keep the Lycine pirate Salador San loyal for a time. By itself, Claw Isle is worthless. But its fall would serve notice to Lord Tywin that my cause is not yet done." The king turned back to Davos. "Speak truly, sir. What do you make of Sir Axel's proposal?"
"Speak truly, sir."
Davos remembered the dark cell he had shared with Lord Alistair, remembered Lamprey and Porridge. He thought of the promises that Sir Axel had made on the bridge above the yard.
a ship or a shove? Ha! What shall it be?"
But this was Stannis asking.
"Your Grace," he said slowly, "I make it folly, aye, and cowardice."
"Cowardice?" Sir Axel all but shouted.
"No man calls me craven before my king."
"Silence!" Stannis commanded. "Sir Davos, speak on. I would hear your reasons."
Davos turned to face Sir Axel.
"You say we ought to show the realm we are not done. Strike a blow. Make war, aye. But on what enemy? You will find no Lannisters on Claw Isle."
"We will find traitors," said Sir Axel. "Though it may be I could find some closer to home, even in this very room."
Davos ignored the jibe. "I don't doubt Lord Celtigar bent the knee to the boy Joffrey. He's an old done man, who wants no more than to end his days in his castle, drinking his fine wine out of his jewel cups."
He turned back to Stannis.
"Yet he came when you called, sire. Came! With his ships and swords, he stood by you at Storm's End when Lord Renly came down on us, and his ships sailed up the Blackwater. His men fought for you, killed for you, burned for you. Claw Isle is weakly held, yes. Held by women and children and old men. And why is that? Because their husbands and sons and fathers died on the Blackwater. That's why. Died at their oars, or with swords in their hands, fighting beneath our banners. Yet Sir Axel proposes we swoop down on the homes they left behind to rape their widows and put their children to the sword. These small folk are no traitors."
"They are," insisted Sir Axel. "Not all of Celtigar's men were slain on the Blackwater. Hundreds were taken with their lord, and bent the knee when he did."
"When he did," Davos repeated. "They were his men, his sworn men. What choice were they given?"
"Every man has choices. They might have refused to kneel. Some did, and died for it. Yet they died true men and loyal."
"Some men are stronger than others."
It was a feeble answer, and Davos knew it. Stannis Baratheon was a man of iron will, who neither understood nor forgave weakness in others.
"I am losing," he thought, despairing.
"It is every man's duty to remain loyal to his rightful king, even if the lord he serves proves false,"
Stannis declared in a tone that brooked no argument. A desperate folly took hold of Davos, a recklessness akin to madness.
"As you remain loyal to King Aerys when your brother raised his banners," he blurted.
Shocked silence followed, until Sir Axel cried,
"Treason!"
and snatched his dagger from his sheath.
"Your Grace, he speaks his infamy into your face!"
Davos could hear Stannis grinding his teeth. A vein bulged blue and swollen in the king's brow. Their eyes met.
"Put up your knife, Sir Axel, and leave us."
"As it please, Your Grace, it will please me for you to leave," said Stannis. "Take yourself from my presence, and send me Melisande."
"As you command." Sir Axel slid the knife away, bowed, and hurried toward the door. His boots rang against the floor, angry.
"You've always presumed on my forbearance," Stannis warned Davos when they were alone. "I can shorten your tongue as easily as I did your fingers, smuggler."
"I am your man, Your Grace, so it is your tongue to do with as you please."
"It is," he said calmer, "and I would have it speak the truth, though the truth is a bitter draught at times.
Aerys, if you only knew, that was a hard choosing. My blood or my liege, my brother or my king."
He grimaced.
"Have you ever seen the Iron Throne? The barbs along the back, the ribbons of twisted steel, the jagged ends of swords and knives all tangled up and melted? It is not a comfortable seat, sir. Aerys cut himself so often, men took to calling him King Scab,
and Maegor the Cruel was murdered in that chair, by that chair, to hear some tell it. It is not a seat where a man can rest at ease. Oft-times I wonder why my brothers wanted it so desperately.
"Why would you want it, then?"
Davos asked him. "It is not a question of wanting. The throne is mine as Robert's heir. That is law. After me it must pass to my daughter, unless Selyse should finally give me a son." He ran three fingers lightly down the table, over the layers of smooth, hard varnish, dark with age. "I am king. Once do not enter into it. I've a duty to my daughter, to the realm, even to Robert. He loved me but little, I know, yet he was my brother. The Lannister woman gave him horns and made a motley fool of him. She may have murdered him as well, as she murdered John Arryn and Ned Stark. For such crimes there must be justice, starting with Cersei and her abominations, but only starting. I mean to scour the court clean, as Robert should have done after the Trident. Sir Barristan once told me that the rot in King Aerys' reign began with Varys. The eunuch should have never been pardoned, no more than the Kingslayer. At the least, Robert should have stripped the white cloak from Jaime and sent him to the wall, as Lord Stark urged. He listened to John Arryn instead. I was still at Storm's End, under siege and unconsulted. He turned abruptly to give Davos a hard, shrewd look. "The truth now. Why did you wish to murder Lady Melisandre?"
"So he does know."
Davos could not lie to him.
"Four of my sons burned on the Blackwater. She gave them to the flames."
"You wrong her. Those fires were no work of hers. Curse the imp. Curse the pyromancers. Curse that fool of Florent, who sailed my fleet into the jaws of a trap. Or curse me, for my stubborn pride, for sending her away when I needed her most. But not Melisandre. She remains my faithful servant."
"Maester Cresson was your faithful servant. She slew him, as she killed Sir Courtney Penrose and your brother Renly."
"Now you sound a fool," the king complained.
"She saw Renly's end in the flames, yes, but she had no more part in it than I did. The priestess was with me. Your Devon will tell you so. Ask him, if you doubt me. She would have spared Renly if she could. It was Melisandre who urged me to meet with him, and give him one last chance to amend his treason. It was Melisandre who told me to send for you when Sir Axel wished to give you to R'hllor."
He smiled thinly. "Does that surprise you?"
"Yes. She knows I am no friend to her, or her Red God.
But you are a friend to me. She knows that as well." He beckoned Davos closer.
"The boy is sick. Maester Pylos has been leeching him." "The boy?"
His thoughts went to his Devon, the king's squire.
"My son, sire?"
"Devon? Oh, a good boy. He has much of you in him. It is Robert's bastard who is sick, the boy we took at Storm's End."
"Adric Storm. I spoke with him in Aegon's garden."
"As she wished, as she saw." Stannis sighed.
"Did the boy charm you?
He has that gift. He got it from his father, with the blood. He knows he is a king's son, but chooses to forget that he is bastard-born, and he worships Robert, as Renly did when he was young. My royal brother played the fond father on his visits to Storm's End, and there were gifts, swords and ponies and fur-trimmed cloaks. The eunuchs work, every one. The boy would write the Red Keep full of thanks, and Robert would laugh and ask Varys what he had sent this year. Renly was no better. He left the boy's upbringing to castellans and maesters, and every one fell victim to his charm. Penrose chose to die rather than give him up." The king ground his teeth together.
"It still angers me. How could he think I would hurt the boy? I chose Robert, did I not? When that hard day came, I chose blood over honour." "He does not use the boy's name."
That made Davos very uneasy.
"I hope young Edric will recover soon."
Stannis waved a hand, dismissing his concern.
It is a chill, no more. He coughs, he shivers, he has a fever. Maester Pylos will soon set him right. By himself the boy is naught, you understand? But in his veins flows my brother's blood. There is power in a king's blood, she says.
Davis did not have to ask who she was. Stannis touched the painted table.
Look at it, Onion Knight. My realm, by rights, my Westeros. He swept a hand across it. This talk of seven kingdoms is a folly. Aegon saw that 300 years ago, when he stood where we are standing. They painted this table at his command. Rivers and bays they painted, hills and mountains, castles and cities and market towns, lakes and swamps and forests, but no borders. It is all one. One realm, for one king to rule alone.
One king, agreed Davos. One king means peace.
I shall bring justice to Westeros. I think Sir Axel understands as little as he does war. Clore Isle would gain me naught, and it was evil, just as you said. Celtigar must pay the traitor's price himself in his own person, and when I come into my kingdom he shall. Every man shall reap what he has sown, from the highest lord to the lowest gutter rat, and some will lose more than the tips off their fingers, I promise you. They have made my kingdom bleed, and I do not forget that.
King Stannis turned from the table.
On your knees, Onion Knight.
Your grace?
For your onions and fish, I made you a knight once. For this, I am of a mind to raise you to lord.
This? Davos was lost.
I am content to be your knight, your grace. I would not know how to begin being lordly.
Good. To be lordly is to be false. I have learned that lesson hard. Now kneel.
Your king commands.
Davos knelt, and Stannis drew his longsword. Lightbringer, Melisandre had named it. The red sword of heroes, drawn from the fires where the seven guards were consumed. The room seemed to grow brighter as the blade slid from its scabbard. The steel had a glow to it, now orange, now yellow, now red. The air shimmered around it, and no jewel had ever sparkled so brilliantly. But when Stannis touched it to Davos's shoulder, it felt no different than any other longsword.
"Sir Davos of House Seaworth," the king said, "are you my true and honest liegeman now and forever?"
"I am, your grace."
"And do you swear to serve me loyally all your days, to give me honest counsel and swift obedience, to defend my rights and my realm against all foes in battles great and small, to protect my people and punish my enemies?"
"I do, your grace."
"Then rise again, Davos Seaworth, and rise as Lord of the Rainwood, Admiral of the Narrow Sea, and Hand of the King."
For a moment, Davos was too stunned to move.
"I woke this morning in his dungeon."
"Your grace, you cannot. I am no fit man to be a king's hand."
"There is no man fitter." Davos sheathed Lightbringer, gave Davos his hand, and pulled him to his feet.
"I am low-born," Davos reminded him. "An up-jump smuggler. Your lords will never obey me."
"Then we will make new lords."
"But I cannot read, nor write."
"Maester Pylos can read for you. As to writing, my last hand wrote the head off his shoulders. All I ask of you are the things you've always given me: honesty, loyalty, service."
"Surely there's someone better, some great lord."
Stannis snorted.
"Bar Eamon, that boy, my faithless grandfather. Celtigar has abandoned me. The new Valyrian is 6 years old, and the new Sunglass sailed for Volantis after I burned his brother."
He made an angry gesture.
"A few good men remain, it's true. Sir Gilbert Faring holds Storm's End for me still, with 200 loyal men.
Lord Morrigan, the Bastard of Night Song, young Chittering, my cousin Andrew. But I trust none of them, as I trust you, my Lord of Rainwood. You will be my hand. It is you I want beside me for the battle. Another battle will be the end of all of us, thought Davos. Lord Alistair saw that much true enough.
Your Grace asked for honest counsel. In honesty, then, we lack the strength for another battle against the Lannisters.
It is the great battle His Grace is speaking of, said a woman's voice, rich with the accents of the East. Melisande stood at the door, in her red silks and shimmering satins, holding a covered silver dish in her hands. These little wars are no more than the scuffle of children before what is to come. The one whose name may not be spoken is marshalling his power, Davos Seaworth, a power fell and evil and strong beyond measure. Soon comes the cold and the night that never ends. She placed a silver dish on the painted table. Unless true men find the courage to fight it. Men whose hearts are fire.
Stannis stared at the silver dish.
She has shown it to me, Lord Davos. In the flames. You saw it, sire?
It was not like Stannis Baratheon to lie about such a thing.
With mine own eyes. After the battle, when I was lost to despair, the Lady Melisande bid me gaze into the hearth fire. The chimney was drawing strongly, and bits of ash were rising from the fire. I stared at them, feeling half a fool, but she bid me look deeper, and the ashes were white, rising in the updraft. Yet all at once it seemed as if they were falling. Snow, I thought. Then the sparks in the air seemed to circle, to become a ring of torches, and I was looking through the fire. Down on some high hill in a forest. The cinders had become men in black behind the torches, and there were shapes moving through the snow. For all the heat of the fire, I felt a cold, so terrible I shivered. But when I did, the sight was gone. The fire, but a fire once again. But what I saw was real. I'd stake my kingdom on it.
"'And have,' said Melisande.
The conviction in the king's voice frightened Davos to the core.
"'A hill in a forest? Shapes in the snow? I don't—'
"'It means that the battle is begun,' said Melisande. "'The sand is running through the glass more quickly now, and man's hour on earth is almost done. We must act boldly, or all hope is lost.' Westeros must unite beneath her one true king, the prince that was promised, Lord of Dragonstone, and chosen of R'hllor.
R'hllor chooses queerly, then,
the king grimaced, as if he tasted something foul. Why me, and not my brothers? Renly and his peach. In my dreams I can see the juice running from his mouth, the blood from his throat. If he had done his duty by his brother, we would have smashed Lord Tywin. A victory even Robert could be proud of. Robert! His teeth ground side to side. He's in my dreams as well, laughing, drinking, boasting. Those were the things he was best at. Those, and fighting. I never bested him at anything. The Lord of Light should have made Robert his champion. Why me?
Because you are a righteous man.
Said Melisande. A righteous man. Stannis touched the covered silver platter with a finger.
With leeches.
Yes, said Melisande. But I must tell you once more, this is not the way.
You swore it would work.
The king looked angry.
It will, and it will not.
Which?
Both.
Speak sense to me, woman.
When the fire speak more plainly, so shall I. There is truth in the flames, but is not always easy to see.
The great red ruby at her throat drank fire from the glow of the brazier.
"Give me the boy, Your Grace. It is the surer way, the better way. Give me the boy, and I shall wake the stone dragon."
"I've told you, no."
"He is only one base-born boy, against all the boys of Westeros, and all the girls as well, against all the children that might ever be born in all the kingdoms of the world.
The boy is innocent."
"The boy defiled your marriage-bed, else you would surely have sons of your own. He shamed you."
"Robert did that, not the boy. My daughter's grown fond of him, and he's mine own blood."
"Your brother's blood," Melisande said. "A king's blood. Only a king's blood can wake the stone dragon."
Stannis ground his teeth. "I'll hear no more of this. The dragons are done. The Targaryens tried to bring them back half a dozen times, and made fools of themselves, all corpses. Patchface is the only fool we need on this godforsaken rock. You have the leeches. Do your work."
Melisande bowed her head stiffly and said, "As my king commands."
Reaching up her left sleeve with her right hand, she flung a handful of powder into the brazier. The coals roared. As pale flames writhed atop them, the Red Woman retrieved the silver dish and brought it to the king. Davos watched her lift the lid. Beneath were three large black leeches, fat with blood.
"The boy's blood," Davos knew. "A king's blood."
Stannis stretched forth a hand, and his fingers closed around one of the leeches.
"Say the name," Melisande commanded.
The leech was twisting in the king's grip, trying to attach itself to one of his fingers.
"The usurper," he said, "Joffrey Baratheon."
When he tossed the leech into the fire, it curled up like an autumn leaf amidst the coals and burned. Stannis grasped the second.
"The usurper," he declared, louder this time. "Balon Greyjoy."
He flipped it lightly onto the brazier, and its flesh spit and cracked. The blood burst from it, hissing and smoking. The last was in the king's hand. This one he studied a moment as it writhed between his fingers.
"The usurper," he said at last. "Robb Stark."
And he threw it on the flames. Jaime. Harrenhal's bathhouse was a dim, steamy, low-ceilinged room filled with great stone tubs. When they led Jaime in, they found Brienne seated in one of them, scrubbing her arm almost angrily.
"Not so hard, wench," he called. "You'll scrub the skin off."
She dropped her brush and covered her tits with hands as big as Gregor Clegane's. The pointy little buds she was so intent on hiding would have looked more natural on some 10-year-old than they did on her thick, muscular chest.
"What are you doing here?" she demanded. "Lord Bolton insists I sup with him, but he neglected to invite my fleas."
Jaime tugged at his guard with his left hand. "Help me out of these stinking rags." One-handed, he could not so much as unlace his breeches. The man obeyed grudgingly, but he obeyed.
"Now leave us," Jaime said when his clothes lay in a pile on the wet stone floor. "My Lady of Tarth doesn't want the likes of you scum gaping at her tits."
He pointed his stump at the hatchet-faced woman attending Brienne.
"You too. Wait without. There's only one door, and the wench is too big to try and shinny up a chimney."
The habit of obedience went deep. The woman followed his guard out, leaving the bathhouse to the two of them. The tubs were large enough to hold 6 or 7, after the fashion of the free cities, so Jaime climbed in with the wench, awkward and slow. Both his eyes were open, though the right remained somewhat swollen, despite Kyburn's leeches. Jaime felt 109 years old, which was a deal better than he had been feeling when he came to Harrenhal. Brienne shrunk away from him,
There are other tubs. This one suits me well enough.
Gingerly, he immersed himself up to the chin in the steaming water. Have no fear, wench. Your thighs are purple and green, and I am not interested in what you've got between them. He had to rest his right arm on the rim, since Kaiban had warned him to keep the linen dry. He could feel the tension drain from his legs, but his head spun.
If I faint, pull me out. No Lannister has ever drowned in his bath, and I don't mean to be the first. Why should I care how you die?
You swore a solemn vow. He smiled as a red flush crept up the thick white column of her neck. She turned her back to him.
Still the Shy Maiden. What is it that you think I haven't seen?
He groped for the brush she had dropped, caught it with his fingers, and began to scrub himself desultorily. Even that was difficult, awkward.
My left hand is good for nothing.
Still the water darkened as the cake dirt dissolved off his skin. The wench kept her back to him, the muscles in her great shoulders hunched and hard.
"Does the sight of my stump distress you so?" Jamie asked. "You ought to be pleased. I've lost the hand I killed the king with, the hand that flung the Stark boy from that tower, the hand I'd slayed between my sister's thighs to make her wet."
He thrust his stump at her face.
"No wonder Renly died, with you guarding him."
She jerked to her feet as if it struck her, sending a wash of hot water across the tub. Jamie caught a glimpse of the thick blonde bush at the juncture of her thighs as she climbed out.
She was much hairier than his sister. Absurdly, he felt his cock stir beneath the bathwater. "No, I know I've been too long away from Cersei."
He averted his eyes, troubled by his body's response.
That was unworthy," he mumbled. "I'm a maimed man, and bitter. Forgive me, wench. You protected me as well as any man could have, and better than most."
She wrapped her nakedness in a towel.
"You mock me?"
That pricked him back to anger.
"Are you as thick as a castle wall? That was an apology. I'm tired of fighting with you. What say we make a truce?" "Truces are built on trust. Would you have me trust
the Kingslayer, yes? The oathbreaker who murdered poor sad Aerys Targaryen?" Jaime snorted.
"It's not Aerys I rue, it's Robert. I hear they've named you Kingslayer," he said to me at his coronation feast. "Just don't think to make it a habit." And he laughed. "Why is it that no one names Robert Oathbreaker? He tore the realm apart, yet I am the one with shit for honor. Robert did all he did for love."
Water ran down Brienne's legs and pooled beneath her feet.
"Robert did all he did for pride, a cunt, and a pretty face.
He made a fist, or would have, if he'd had a hand." Pain lanced up his arm, cruel as laughter.
"He rode to save the realm," she insisted.
"To save the realm. Did you know that my brother set the Blackwater rush afire? Wildfire will burn on water. Aerys would have bathed in it if he dared. The Targaryens were all mad for fire."
Jamie felt light-headed. "It is the heat in here, the poison in my blood, the lust, my fever. I am not myself."
He eased himself down until the water reached his chin.
"Soiled my white cloak. I wore my gold armor that day, but—" "Gold armor?"
Her voice sounded far off, faint. He floated in heat, in memory. "After Dancing Griffins lost the Battle of the Bells, Aerys exiled him."
Why am I telling this absurd, ugly child?
He had finally realized that Robert was no mere outlaw lord to be crushed at whim, but the greatest threat House Targaryen had faced since Daemon Blackfyre.
The king reminded Luan Martell gracelessly that he held Aelia, and sent him to take command of the 10,000 Dornishmen coming up the king's road. John Darry and Barristan Selmy rode to Stony Sept to rally what they could of Griffin's men, and Prince Rhaegar returned from the south
and persuaded his father to swallow his pride and summon my father. But no raven returned from Castle Rock, and that made the king even more afraid. He saw traitors everywhere, and Varys was always there to point out any he might have missed.